You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
This crowd rises to its feet.
Vaccaro slammed it home.
Garland left wing, three ball.
Perfect.
Garland went to the lane, lobbed the Mobley, pow.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by FuboTV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The Cleveland Cavaliers missed another opportunity to get a big win, losing at Madison Square Garden in painful fashion. And joining me today to discuss that, as well as the rest of this road trip, is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad, man. Busy day at the day job. Had a couple after hours meetings. So it's been a mad dash to get from meeting to bath time to bedtime to dishes to here, but I'm ready, baby. Let's talk about a pretty bummer game.
It was absolutely a bummer. It was great to have Donovan Mitchell back. I would have preferred if the first full game with the full healthy lineup wasn't game 49, but you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Also, to be fair, I was thinking, like, oh, that's so crazy. But then I was like, well, they kind of chose to do that.
Right.
That was an active choice.
It was an active choice, but it does also go a lot further than just Ricky Rubio. But it was nice to see Donovan out there. I thought he looked good when he was running around. Unfortunately, it did seem like he got hurt at the end of the game. He mentioned that he was dealing with some cramping after the game, so we'll see whether or not he plays these next two games on the road trip. Doesn't sound like anything too serious, but just kind of looking at the track record, team usually plays it safe with this kind of stuff, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him at the very least sit out against Houston. But yeah, it was a tough, tough game because it was a real deviation from what we've seen for a lot of this season, which was early in the year, I'd say the first 30-plus games, it was the bench that was really carrying the Cavs. The starters were good, but the bench lineup was fantastic. That was not the case against the Knicks. The starters were very, very good. I would say flat-out dominant. Even though Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell didn't shoot particularly well, they outscored the Knicks by 20 points with Garland on the court. But they still managed to lose because the bench minutes just did not click. It was a very rough showing. I'd say probably the worst game we saw from Ricky Rubio. And it just gave too big of a hole for the starters to climb out of.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted the starters to be the ones kind of leading this team, but not like this, Justin. Not like this. yeah, I mean, it was just an absolutely rough outing for the second unit, and you know, quite the inverse for the starters on a night where Darius and Donnie didn't even shoot well. You look at the plus minuses down the box score, and you know what happened. It's rarely that simple to say. The team just got absolutely destroyed when they had, two or more bench players on the floor, but all the numbers back that up. I mean, I tweeted this, but in the 10 minutes Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love shared the floor, the Cavs had a minus 100 net rating. there's noise in that, obviously. I mean, yeah, it's
single game net ratings, 10 minute net ratings aren't great.
But 10 minutes ain't a 1 minute. Yeah. You know, like you'll see that for guys who, for lineups that play 1 or 2 minutes together, it's surprising to see them get blown out that hard to capable vets in those two. But it was really everyone. I don't think they looked good when Karras was on the floor. And it was really, especially the minutes with no Darius and no Donnie, that were really, really hard. And, you know, we're going to see JB do a little experimenting with his rotations. Mm-hmm. We're going to see him see if he can get away with minutes without either of those guys on the floor, because, you know, you want to give them minutes together. And, you know, frankly, you want to give minutes to the other players on the floor. On the team, and yeah, it's easier to do that when both of them are sitting. But you know, I think we're watching him try to figure some stuff out with this team right now, because it was a long stretch at the end of the first, start of the second, with both those guys sitting, and it was just they were not even generating close to decent looks. And I think, you know, really, if you look at a 2-point differential, those are the stretches that really lost him the game.
Yeah, and I saw Danny Cunningham share a quote a week ago from JB Bickerstaff, where he was saying, hey, as we get guys back, the first half is going to have a lot of experimenting, and second half, we're going to go out and try to win it. I understand that, and I understand that there's going to be trial and error with this, right? Like, you're going to have stretches where, even if a lineup doesn't work in initial minutes, you might still play it for a little bit to see, hey, how malleable are the guys within this lineup? Can they adapt to this role? Can we make it click? Chemistry and continuity is such an important part of basketball, where the talent is higher than ever. So whether you're making decisions a half second slow or a half second fast, because you're either rushing or you're going too slow, that's going to have an impact on your effectiveness. But I would say, and I know I tweeted this during the game, but I would say that at least while we're going through this transition period, I would like to see at least one of Darius and Donovan on the court at all times when both are healthy. And that means even with Ricky Rubio, because Ricky Rubio is going to take some time to get back into form. And until he's kind of back in a groove, you kind of want to have that bridge. Like, I would still like to see one of Darius and Donovan on the court at all times, one of Allen and Mobley, which they did do that with the bigs. But I would like to see one of the guards out there at all time, because I just think it gives you a little bit more stability and it raises your floor in those minutes. I understand not all these lineups are going to work. There is going to be an adjustment period, but I would just like to see that trend continue.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what he did for the vast majority of the year. And, you know, I think that's a byproduct of Ricky not being there. But when both of those guys were healthy, they would spend a fair amount of minutes apart. And, you know, like, that's a luxury a lot of teams don't have, is to always have a star guard on the floor. And it's not one I think the Cavs should punt too eagerly. You know, it is hard to be too critical when you know a coach is trying some stuff out.
Yeah.
But I do think I did take some issues. You know, I just thought that lineup, especially, it feels to me like Dean is still trying to get his sea legs under him, because Lamar came out there before Jetty or Dean, with no Ricky or with no Darius and no Donovan. Like, that's as close to a lineup that I would describe as a no shot lineup as you're gonna find, especially with Ricky still finding his way. You know, like, the spacing isn't there, the foot speed defensively isn't necessarily there with that lineup. I feel like they got run off the floor, and, you know, rightfully so. You know, it's going to be a tough line to toe. I've talked a lot about how I think this is the biggest challenge of JB's coaching career. It obviously is super hard to coach a team that's not super talented, but in a lot of ways, I think it's harder to coach one that is, because you got mouths to feed now. You got to play the right combinations together. You got to experiment without blowing games. And that's a really, really tough task. So I'm pretty eager to see kind of how that goes for JB and see kind of where how much he's willing to experiment. I mean, he played 11 guys in the first half. That's a weird choice for a guy who said he wasn't going to play 11, 12 guys. I think you said this in the Discord of like, you know, at what point do you balance? I'm trying to make this the Lamar test game, but we're getting run off the floor. So Dean, get out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, when do you kind of throw your plan to the wind and just try to find a lineup that works? It's a tough conundrum, you know? And I think that's why I've been so hesitant to criticize JB, these last couple games, with the exception of, I really didn't love, the end of the Grizzlies game. But I've been a little hesitant to criticize like things like rotations and who's getting minutes and who isn't, because I'm like, unless I have a really good idea of what he should be doing, then I'm not going to be super critical,
yeah.
Right? Like I'm not going to go out of my way unless I have like a counterpoint or a thing I would do different. So, mm-hmm. And not having all the info on kind of who's healthy, who's feeling good. I think we're going to have to just deal with some growing pains while he figures out this roster. Now that it's, fully complete.
Yeah, and I think we're also seeing that just because a name is active in the lineup doesn't mean the version of that player we're used to is, like, existing. Dean Wade has not attempted a field goal in any of the minutes he's played so far since he's come back. Like, at the start of the year, Dean Wade, we were talking about, hey, he's taking movement threes now. Like, he's doing all this stuff, being more assertive. And I thought he passed up an open three against the Knicks that I think probably kind of shook the confidence, especially as the lineup just wasn't working and you were losing ground against the Knicks. I just think I'm very fine with the experimenting. I think you're going to see lineups. Like, what I want to see is lineups that make sense in theory. And I just thought, like, the Rubio, Karis, Jetty, Lamar, a Mobley lineup, that, like, lineups like that, I think, is just asking a little bit too much of those guys, especially as Rubio is working his way back into the lineup. I would just like to see that offensive bridge. And if Donovan's missing time, you're not going to have that offensive bridge, and it's probably going to have to be Karis. But it's certainly something I'm not going to dwell on too long, because time together is such a big factor, and the game-to-game performance you get from some of these guys. Like, Karis LeVert looks amazing some nights, and then other nights it just isn't clicking for him, right? And if you don't have that consistency, you don't know what that baseline expectation is for what the floor of these players is going to be, it does make it a harder to make those evaluations and put together a lineup. But we should probably add, Carter, one of our favorite things did occur at the end of this game, which was last 2-minute report apologies. Donovan Mitchell, the NBA confirms, was fouled twice in the last 2 minutes. One drive against RJ Barrett, and then, of course, the final shot against Isaiah Hartenstein. The Hartenstein one, I thought, was obvious in real time. The Barrett one, I thought Donovan was actually out of control. I thought there were three possessions where Donovan kind of rushed things a little more than he needed to, and didn't kind of trust his teammates. Maybe just the moment being at MSG, trying to get the win yourself. I thought he called his own number rather than kind of trusting the team. And even on that Hartenstein play, he did miss a read to Jared Allen there. But the Barrett one in particular, I think he really kind of pushed in transition and forced the shot, which, if you're forcing it in that moment, is going to be harder for a ref to call. And I'm not going to dwell on the last 2-minute report. We got away with two against Chicago. You're going to have some that go your way, some that you don't. You shouldn't have been in that position to begin with. But I do think, at least when you're talking about evaluation of those individual plays, it's worth bringing up, because the Barrett one, I thought, was Donovan pressing. And the final play, I thought, was good. They ran an action, got Julius Randle, not a great defender, switched on Donovan Mitchell. He beat him pretty easily. He had an easy read to Allen, and he had a decent look at the rim, right, with Isaiah Hartenstein needing to foul him to stop the possession. Like, to me, that's a good look at the end of the game. And you can criticize Donovan's decision-making in that spot, but in terms from a play standpoint, I thought it was a good look.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine end-of-game outcome, you know? Like, yes, he got fouled, but, you know, the Cavs have also benefited from some of the last 2-minute report luck. So, I think that's why, like, I'd rather focus on the longer term of the game and also the decisions, to your point about, you know, Donnie kind of breaking the offense a little bit and just trying to, you know, play a little hero ball, which he's a heroic player. He's going to pull that off more often than not. And again, like, I thought he was a total net positive. Obviously, I'm really hoping that that groin injury is not going to be something that persists. You know, those soft tissue injuries just sometimes just take a long time to go away, which is sucky. But, you know, in the minutes he was out there, the three-pointer was obviously on point, even if his finishing around the rim was a little bit less, so 3 of 10 from two-point range. But, yeah, I mean, I thought overall, you know, I thought the ball being played in the fourth quarter was good. The end-of-game execution, not so much, and also you got a little bad luck with the refs on the road, which, you know, it's just going to happen. So, like, and I do think it's important to note, like, I know this Knicks team isn't, like, gangbusters right now, but they're not a bad team. It's not, like, a humiliating loss. It's just a loss that you kind of think that... I think it was frustrating because when the two teams were going blow for blow with their starters, it was clear the Cavs were much better. You know, and, like, even on a night where Julius Randle is going absolutely bonkers from 3, 8 of 12 on what I could, from what I saw, mostly contested... or at least semi-contested threes, for a 33%, you know, three-point shooter. You know, even with that happening, I think, like, the team starters outplayed the Knicks starters, and their second unit is what let them down, and that's a bummer because, you know, this is a second unit with legitimate pedigree. You know, Rubio, LeVert, and Love, those are three, like, if you're a marginal NBA fan, those are all household names. So to have those three, obviously, I know they played 11 guys, but really only three of them got legit minutes in Rubio, LeVert, and Love. And the fact that their minutes went so poorly, it's just tough. And, you know, I'm really hoping that they can find a little bit more stability from the bench. That's what the bench was for them last year, Justin, was that, especially when Rubio was healthy, it was the group of grown-ups that would come in and calm things down. Not the group that would kind of let games slip. So I'm hoping this is a bit of an aberration as Ricky finds his sea labs, his legs, as Kevin continues to get healthy, because this is a tough outcome.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like... being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Yeah, I thought Ricky it was almost like he sensed that that lineup didn't have a lot of juice and really was pressing. Like he threw up some wild attempts that some of them didn't even make contact with the rim.
Over-penetrated a bunch and then got stonewalled at bad angles. It just was not his game.
No. It was very different than the last time he played at MSG. And maybe he was feeling familiar and comfortable with that arena after going off for a career high there. But you're right. Like, losing to the Knicks isn't a bad loss. That is a good team. They do play well at home. They play hard. They're in a lot of close games. But it is connected to a prolonged stretch of the season where this Cavs team isn't playing winning basketball. Or they're playing 500 basketball, right? Like, what they're playing is playoff basketball, but not home court basketball. And I think it's fair to have the expectation, and I'm sure they have the expectation, that they should be playing home court basketball, right? They're missing opportunities to make up ground on those teams. And in fact, creating some separation between them and the top four, right? And I do think it's worth noting, like, in a vacuum, this one loss isn't that bad, but it is part of a larger trend that needs to turn around, because the longer you have this stretch, and every team goes through a stretch like this, but the longer this stretch goes on, the more of a hole you're going to dig for yourself. Just like we talk about putting yourselves in a hole within the micro concept of the one game against the Knicks, in the macro sense, it's true as well, right? And you don't know how healthy you're going to be down the stretch. You need to bank wins whenever you can. And that's why I think it's really important for them to win these next two games. I know it's a road back-to-back, three games in four nights, but Oklahoma City is not a good team at protecting the rim. That's a game where, similar to what they did against the Bucks, where third game in four night, you're at a rest disadvantage, all that stuff, they attacked the living hell out of the rim. It was Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, let's get good quality shots in close. That's what the goal should be, because even though you're going to be at a rest disadvantage, you've had a stretch of bad basketball or uneven basketball, I should say. You gotta start turning around and winning a game that maybe isn't the best ideal conditions and all that, and finding a way to grit it out. That's what you need to do with or without Donovan Mitchell, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is a stretch of kind of meh play. And it just feels like this team, there's been plenty of positive over the stretch, but the positive hasn't all kind of aligned. Like, that was one of the things about that early season run, which is like, there were so like 5-6 things that were breaking really well for the team.
Yeah.
You know, Love was hot. Donnie was unbelievable.
Jetty got off to a good start.
Yeah. Jetty was on fire. So like, you had 2-3 things going. Kind of feels like this team can only kind of get 1 or 2 good things going a game right now.
Yeah.
And then, and the things that are bad, like, it's like bottom dropout bad. And like, there's basically like, The Cavs are like kind of like a macrocosm of Jetty Osman right now. Like, when Jetty's awesome, which he was against Milwaukee, then he's really awesome. And then when he's not awesome, it's like you almost can't justify having him out there. And like, I feel like that's kind of the way a lot of the trends are going for the Cavs right now. Like, you'll have a Mobley game like against the Bucks that's like so encouraging. And everything feels like it's going, but like, it hasn't been prolonged. They're not putting 2-3 games in a row of just a really awesome play. And they're going to have to figure it out. If they want to put themselves in that class of team, then that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the interesting thing is, like, when you're in a situation like this, it's not on any one player, right? Like, every single person shares some responsibility in situations like this. And it's JB, it's Garland, it's Mitchell. As much as they won the minutes without, or won the minutes with Garland and Mitchell, both of them could have played better, right? Like, I don't think any single one player was in a position where they could be absolved of blame. Like, even Jared Allen had a great game, but that late game three to Julius Randle, like, Jalen Brunson was driving in from the wing, creating some penetration, and Randle basically took one step in, faking like he was going to go into the paint, and Allen basically assumed that's going to be a pass to Randle in the paint, and stepped off him. And Julius created basically like 5 feet, 6 feet of space on an easy open three at a crucial moment of the game because Allen kind of overcorrected and overreacted in that spot. Every single person shares some responsibility for this stretch, and everyone can be better. And I think that's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And you know, again, not to do the classic loser take, they also just got burned with some bad three-point luck, Justin. Like, 17 of 33 for New York on a night where I do not think this was like the night against the Warriors, where they were sloppy and lazy. I thought they defended the line pretty well, man.
Yeah, they did defend the line pretty well. Yeah, it's... Okay, I'm of two opinions here because I thought in general the defense on Randle was pretty good. Like, he is a 33% shooter that his bread and butter is attacking the basket, getting into the paint, opening up step backs even from there. He's not usually taking 13 three-pointers. So you're going to go under the majority of the time. There were a couple threes that stand out to me. The Allen three was one. Donovan Mitchell had a late contest on him. That's not really going to do a whole lot. And there was one where it seemed to be a miscommunication in the first quarter where he's wide open. Other than that, I thought he was defended pretty well. What I did notice was that the Randle threes didn't bother me, but there was some overhelping from Karis, Lamar. I think even Jetty when he was out there, where the Knicks were driving into the paint and it overhelping, trying to take away the drive, was creating opportunities for wide open corner three-pointers. And those are the ones you got to cut down on. I understand every team gives those up, but if you're going to talk about constructive criticism kind of within that game, we need to trust the bigs a little bit more. And for me, I feel like it's more of an execution thing than a schematic thing, because when Isaac Okoro is out there on the court, he's not helping out on that driving lane the same way. He's staying closer to his man, and he's not giving up those threes as frequently. So I do think it's Karis Lamar trying to do the right things, right? Like, they're trying to compete on the defensive end, but I do think overhelping is something that's coming up. I'm not concerned with the overall three-point numbers or the frequency that they give up shots. All of that we can get into in a moment, but if you're talking about what's actually actionable and what they can do better, overhelping is an area that I think the Cavs can improve on, because I do think that it contributes to some of the corner threes that they give up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. I think that every team has defensive lapses and things to work on, but also they only gave up 9 open threes last night.
Is that it? Oh my god.
That's Chris Fedor in his post against the Warriors, they gave up 21 uncontested threes. Against New York on Tuesday, quote, they contested 24 of the 33 triple tries. Like, it's not terrible, man, and it's like
it's not, but again, it's also not.
Randle
why they
isn't
lost.
Even good at this. Like, well, I mean, they would have won if Randle made one less.
Yeah, I get that, but part of it too is like the Cavs don't have a ton of shot making. So when you do have these outlier 3-point shooting games, it's harder for the Cavs to keep pace, right? Because you start running into that math issue.
I felt that way watching this game, bro. I felt this that way where they would generate a clean open look for Darius and he just would miss. And it's like, man, it just feels like the other teams aren't missing those right now. And we're missing a lot of those. Those tight Turner plays. This team is not, for whatever reason, I don't think it's a skill thing because it's mostly the guys I want taking them. Like, every time they have a chance for a backbreaker three in the last couple weeks, it just hasn't gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know why that is. But and I know that this is probably a little bit of gambler's fallacy where I'm like, it just feels bad. And maybe that's not actually true, but that's the way it feels right now. It feels like the Cavs have to earn every win they get right now. Whereas their competition can be like, oh, we're just really hot today. It's fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it is a skill thing. I think sometimes you run into these ruts and a lack of continuity is a factor, right? Like, when you're just a little uncomfortable, you're playing with guys that you haven't played a whole lot with in a while, like, all of that can contribute when you're playing 500 basketball. Like, you start you grip the ball a little differently than you do when you're on a winning streak, right? So I think it's something that they are going to get out of, but it definitely feels like like, it just, they're not hitting the momentum threes, and it's a frustrating thing, because I agree with you. I think they are getting quality looks.
Yeah, it's just one of those stretches, man. And I really hope they, you know, but again, I don't want to say that to, like, you know, remove any burden of execution. Like, this is still a game I think they should have won. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if their bench plays a little better, if JB's rotations are a little tighter, if Donovan executes a little bit better in the fourth quarter, you know, like, there's plenty of places to point beyond three-point shooting luck as to why they didn't win the game. I do think three-point shooting luck mattered, you know, because it does also kind of start, when you have to start closing out hard on Julius Randle, it does kind of change the geometry of the floor a little bit. But overall, I think there's plenty of reasons that they lost this game, and in most of it, luckily, is correctable. I did want you to share the stat about opponent three-point shooting that you have in our rundown here, because I really, really, it was one of those Justin did good kind of dives.
So I'm going to peel back the curtain for a half second here. I've been trying to transition to a Zoom read for a little bit, and you keep kind of squashing it and not giving me the easy transition, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Maybe I'll drone on about some stats. It'll make people forget that I even mentioned that, and then I'll sideswipe you with a Zoom read. But so I wanted to look into this, because there's the comment that, hey, this feels like it's always happening against the Cavs, that teams are having these outlier shooting performances. So I started off with, okay, how many times are teams shooting above league average and how many times below? They played 49 games. 27 of those games, the opposing team has shot below league average. So that means 22 games above league average. What I would describe as outlier shooting games is when teams shoot over 50%. There have been 81 games in the NBA this year where a team has shot above 50%. As we've mentioned before, Steph Curry, when there isn't a defender within 6 feet, shoots 47%. So these are games where teams as a collective shoot better than Steph Curry. There's been 81 of those games, and 7 of those games have happened against the Cleveland Cavaliers. You look at the season-long numbers, and coming into the Knicks game, opposing teams were only shooting 1% better than league average against the Cavs. It's now 1.6%, because we had one of those games where teams shoot above 50%. So when you're really looking at, I know people like to take away wins from a winning streak, if you're looking at these 7 games and you're taking those out of the equation, all the three-point numbers look a whole lot better, because the Cavs do not allow a lot of threes, even corner threes. Like I mentioned how I think they can cut back on that. Teams are shooting 0.6% more frequently from the three-point quarters than league average. So it's not a massive outlier there either. But those games really, really skew the numbers. And I think why it feels like this is always happening against the Cavs is because they come grouped together. Not only are these outlier games, but 3 of those games happened in a row. The Toronto, Brooklyn, Indy games all happened in a row. Then a month occurred, and we had 2 games in the last 3 days where that occurred, where the Warriors shot above 50% and the Knicks shot above 50%. And even within those games, I think the Toronto game, the Cavs didn't play good defense. I thought the Warriors game, they didn't play good defense. And Indy was kind of touch and go. I thought there were times that they played well, played good three-point defense, but not overall great three-point defense. But as you said, Knicks and Nets, both of those games, they did not allow a lot of uncontested threes, and it was just good shot making. So this is something that happens. It's not that frequent. We're talking about 7 out of 49 games. There's a month between it, but those outliers are always going to resonate more. It's human nature. We always focus on the bad. It's always going to be something at the bottom of our mind. It can be another month, and if a team shoots 50% against us at the end of February, we're probably going to say, this always happens against us. But it really is not that frequent, and that's why I'm not super concerned about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm not super concerned about the three-point outburst either. Just the way I'm not concerned about the stability of our video calls, because support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaborations for teams around the globe. Zoom. how the world connects.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Buddy, I'm rattled. I am rattled.
I the second you called me out, I was like, I'm stealing this read.
I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. And I said, maybe you get sideswiped. And I was not expecting that. I got fully sideswiped there, my buddy.
Yeah, well, I'm pleased. But I do actually want to compliment you because I think that's a really awesome deep dive and a great way of kind of analyzing how our brains work against us in these kind of moments, because we're so... You know, I think it's one of the downsides to being as stupid fans as we are in terms of how much we care about this team and how much we're spending time or spending thinking about it, is we're always looking for patterns.
Yeah.
And sometimes that leads us to some like rough conclusions. Like if you had told me that in more than half of their games, the Cavs had held opponents under league average from three. Mm-hmm. I would not have believed you.
Like, Carter, there have been 12 games this year where opponent has shot below 30% from three. Like, that's... And there's been 10 where they've shot above 45%. Like, if you want to move it from 50% to 45% because you think, oh, okay, like, that's like a more reasonable range, it still has happened less frequently than holding opponents below 30%. And we forget about the games against Memphis and all those other recent games where teams shot poorly. They shot below 33%. And I believe league average right now for three-point percentage is 36. So if you're allowing like between 30 and 40%, that I think can be explained by, hey, you either had really good defense or you were a step slow on your closeouts. There is no method of closing out that is going to cause a 33% shooter in Julius Randle to shoot 67%, to shoot 8 of 12 from 3. If that was possible, we would have our own guys, as a final play of the game, close out on our own shooters. We would have Evan jump out of Donovan Mitchell with whatever poor closeout technique.
You're out of your mind.
with whatever poor closeout technique you were accusing the Cavs of, that would be a go-to bread and butter play to get him to shoot even better than he already does.
You're a wild boy, Justin. you know, I ultimately, like, it is one of those things where, yes, the stretches have felt bad, but I do think it's much more about execution elsewhere, you know? Like, and I think that's an important note here, is we're not saying that the Cavs have played uneven basketball the last, say, 15 to 20 games because of 3-point luck. We're just saying it's also happening while they're playing some uneven ball.
Yeah.
There have been plenty of things to point at. I think this bench has been a bit of a problem since the first, 15 games of the year when they were, spitting hot fire every single game. But like, that they don't have enough scoring punch off the bench. They don't have enough shooting. And I do think there is a degree of this team doesn't have the role player variance, like all their role players, with the exception of Jetty, really are like these kind of stability guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't have enough guys who just go out and hit 5-6 threes on a night because you left them a little bit too open. And I think other teams have that right now, at least the ones the Cavs are playing. And, it's a problem to solve. Like, these guys got to play better, especially, I think, on the bench. I'm really, really pleased with the starters. The starting lineup, just for my own edification, I looked it up because, as you know, I've been begging for the starting lineup to have positive minutes all year.
Mm-hmm.
And Donnie, Jarrett, Darius, Isaac, and Evan played 22 minutes last night, a pretty decent five-man lineup sample for a single game, and they had a plus 46 net rating, 144 O rating, 98 D rating, both elite numbers.
Yeah,
that's what you want to see. And sometimes you don't have to look further than the box score. You look at the Cavs starters, you look at the Knicks starters. Cavs are all positive, Knicks are all negative, and you look at the bench, it's the inverse. And sometimes it's as simple as that. The bench did not play well enough to win them this game.
Yeah, and you talk about how a lot of kind of the rotation outside of the core four are these stability guys, and I think it's worth celebrating that Isaac Okoro continues to kind of be a stability guy, because that was not the case at the start of the year. And
nope.
I was
begging for him out there all game.
I thought he had a fantastic game. Like, Jalen Brunson, he was shooting more air balls guarded by Isaac Okoro than makes, right? Like, he was legitimately bothered, and you could tell, because Brunson is a really physical point guard. I love the way he plays. He's a great floor general. I think he's been the most important player to the Knicks' success this season. And Isaac...
Yeah, a likely all-star.
A likely all-star. I thought Isaac was driving him nuts. Like, he was trying to put his body into Isaac, and Isaac just wasn't moving and really bothering him from getting off their spots. And if you want to talk about ways that the Cavs could maybe improve their 3-point defense, which, again, I think is fine. I think all the numbers are good there. It's a few outliers, but there's always room for growth. If you want to talk about ways that you could improve, it's getting a body into guys and being more physical and disrupting the rhythm. Like, contesting shots is one thing, but if you look at like how Dylan Brooks plays defense, especially on those late positions,
would kill with a Dylan Brooks style player.
Honestly, like, if I'm the coaching staff, I'm showing Isaac Okoro film of Dylan Brooks and being like, hey, be a bit more of an asshole. Like, really get up into teams' faces, like, bother them, bump them a little more. I know it's hard to say that when he gets one of the worst whistles I've ever seen, like, just shoveling his feet and staying with guys, he'll get calls. But I still think that that's a way that Isaac Okoro can level up his impact. He's already done that with a lot more impact stats, with rebounds, steals, assists, blocks, 5 assists for him against the Knicks. I thought he was a great connecting piece. I think getting up into people's spaces, bothering them physically and disrupting the rhythm is something that the Cavs could do more of. Like, if you want to talk about improvements in terms of 3-point defense, it's trusting the bigs, staying home, understanding that they are going to really disrupt guys in the driving lanes and not cheat off guys and overhelp, be a little more like Isaac in that way. And it's being a little more physical on the perimeter, because I do think the Cavs do allow guys, like, if another team wants someone to get the ball and take a shot on the 3-point line, I don't think we do enough to deter that. And that's a room for growth. It's picking nits. It's the second best defense in the league this year. Like, we're talking about a really, really good defense with a lot of really, really young players. But I think for Isaac, and I know I started this off with praising him, but I think for Isaac and everyone else, being a little more physical and disruptive on the perimeter would be another way that they could level up this defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think Isaac's doing a much better job of towing that line. I think, yes, he had a rough whistle earlier in the year, but yes, I think he also was playing a little out of control, maybe trying to force it.
Mm-hmm.
a little bit. Like, he had a couple plays where he would kind of dig down on to help on pick and roll weak side. Ball would flip back out to Brunson. Brunson would pump fake and drive, and he would just chest him up, man. Just really, really awesome defense. And I really think that starting lineup is starting to make a little bit of sense. And it is really nice having someone like Isaac out there, as opposed to, one of the bigger wings on the team, because you can throw him on Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
As long as Donnie and Darius can hold up their end on, folks like Quentin Grimes and RJ Barrett. And most teams don't have like that super elite point guard and that super elite wing. Mm-hmm. Like, normally you kind of have to pick one or two and one or the other in your team building process. So, like, while that might burn you against some teams, it's pretty rare. And, like, I think you could really feel his flexibility when he was on the floor last night.
Yeah, and big plays, right? Like, I like that he did continue to take threes at big moments. The three he hit was very timely. He had that and one. I love that he pushes the pace in transition. And the being that connecting piece, getting those five assists, that is so important, because we've talked about in the past how we really do like his playmaking, but the limitations of the dribble and some of his passiveness at times, I think, has left that skill set a little dormant. You don't see it kind of manifest within the flow of the game, because he wasn't getting into spots. And now that he is being more active and he's playing with four guys that are good passers, like Allen, Mobley, Garland, Mitchell, those guys are going to find him when he's moving around on the court. And I think he's seen that effort is being rewarded. And that effort is being rewarded, and those passes are being rewarded, because you give it up to Okoro and he can find you right back if you relocate. And that's so damn important. That's such a big part of what the Cavs do offensively, because they don't have a lot of floor spacing. So it is split cuts and relocation and diving in and making their reads off how the defense is collapsing. Like, they create space without spacers, and that's part of why I'm impressed overall with what this offense is. I think working with the personnel they have, it's done a very good job this year, but we still need to iron out some things within that, right? Whether it's players' execution, whether it's trusting guys in big moments and trusting, hey, I can give it to Jared Allen in a big spot and trust him to make the right decision. I think that's the next step. And some of that does come with more time playing with one another, which is why I got so frustrated when Donovan Mitchell gets hurt at the end of the game. Not only do you have the missed foul call, but you add injury to insult. And it's just very frustrating, because time together is something that this team hasn't had. Like, it's at game 49, you would think that you'd have more time together, but that just hasn't been the case.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I know we're starting to sound like a broken record, but I do feel like this run is coming. I thought it was coming. I thought it was going to start, right around last night. And
that was going to be a win. Like, I thought that this stretch right here
felt like a win
was going to be when the Cavs would start to gain some momentum and string some wins together. And honestly, I think they have a really good chance. Like, I don't want to do like the sports talk radio thing of like challenging the team and all that, because no one's listening to this. They don't care. But I would like
our listeners aren't even listening to this. We're at the 45 minute mark. We're down to like three people.
But like, I would love to see them make the most of this, because Houston, whether Donovan's playing or not, that's a disorganized team. That's a team you should beat. And Oklahoma City, they might make the play-in. That is a good team, and you're playing them second night of a back-to-back and all the qualifiers you need, but they can still win that matchup. The Cavs have the talent, with or without Donovan Mitchell, to win that matchup. And more specifically, they're a bad matchup for Oklahoma City because of the bigs that we have, and we need to incorporate them. You win those games, and you had the Clippers at home, who the Clippers will be on the second night of a back-to-back. You know what that usually means for them.
You always know, bro. How do you always know? I can barely track the Cavs schedule.
Buddy, my day job.
You're a sicko.
I'm a research analyst in my day job, man. This is what I do. But after that, the home game against the Clippers, you have a big game against Miami. So if you can win those games and carry that momentum into a very important game against Miami, you can start to build positive momentum. No matter how long and frustrating a stretch of uneven basketball is, you can always turn it around, just like a good stretch can turn around with a bad loss, right? Like,
the highs and lows of an NBA season, it's a marathon. This team is better. I think on the whole for the season, they've been better than the sum of their parts, but that has not been true for this month. And it's frustrating because we knew coming in January was going to be the toughest month, but they've left food on the table. They've lost games that they probably should win and made this month tougher than it needed to be, because overall, like, playing 500, we would have accepted that at the start of the month. But when you look at how those individual losses occur, this is a team that could be playing better than they are right now.
Absolutely. And I think they are capable of that. But like, at a certain point, like, you're losing ground on the top four in the conference.
Yep.
And I don't even think the top four in the conference is even playing that well.
Yeah.
So the like the thing. Fact that. Well, it's fortunate, but it's also frustrating, right? Like, it's not like you're losing ground because you're playing pretty good and they're playing great. You're losing ground because they're playing okay and you're kind of playing not that great.
Yep.
So, like, I think, like, at a certain point, they are going to, if they are what they think they are and what we think they are, you got to go win 4 or 5 games in a row. You got to go win 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't had an 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10 stretch in some time, and you got to go prove it. I think they have that in them. It's just a tough stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. I think this team is better than they've been playing. I still think a lot of the indicators are there. I think it's great that the starting lineup's playing well consistently now. Like, that's one of the hurdles that we needed to clear, and hopefully as the bench guys start to get more comfortable and play better, they're going to be contributors. Like, it really is unfortunate that when Kevin Love breaks his thumb on his shooting hand, Ricky Rubio's working his way back from an ACL, Dean Wade misses 7 weeks and clearly isn't himself. Like, that's a lot of valuable parts of the rotation, and with the exception of Rubio, obviously. But that was a big part of the Cavs' early season success, and all of that has kind of been taken away. When those guys are playing better, when the starting lineup's healthy, there's enough reason to believe this team can turn around, but you just don't want to lose so much ground that we go to the playoffs and we're not in home court, or we're the 4 or 5 when we could have been the 3 and have made life harder for ourselves. Like, you don't want to look back and say January is why. You want to be able to look back and say, if you didn't love me at my January, you don't deserve me on my February, because we just turned it around and we're so good in February. That's what I want to see, Carter. I want to get obnoxious again.
Yeah, I know. And that's really that's where you thrive, brother. And we want to see you get obnoxious too.
So
hopefully the team can get there for you.
Fingers crossed, man. Well, big thanks to everyone that tuned in on YouTube. We really appreciate everyone that hangs out with us live. If you want to support us, you can like and subscribe, click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, you can leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs!
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you did it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.